He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
I mean,
she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM, our late night show. Are you kidding me? Ladies and gentlemen of Jacksonville, Florida, where else would you rather be? And I do mean, where else would you rather be at 10:01 Eastern Standard Time than right here with Dylan Denmark and yours truly? And we certainly appreciate you staying up late with us. We got a ton to do. We got college football, spring football going on. We got the NBA. We got the NFL, obviously. We have a lot to get into over the next 2 hours. Guest lineup looks like this. Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. We'll do a little NCAA tournament. And then we will talk about Florida spring football. Florida State on the field today, their first practice of spring football here in 2024. So a lot of college talk with Brent Beard coming up in less than 20 minutes. We will also go up to the state of Virginia, Virginia Beach. Scott Jackson now does sports radio in Virginia Beach. He's part of the Commanders Radio Network. We'll talk about the brand new Jaguar kicker, Joey Sly. We'll also talk a little Washington Commanders as far as Dan Quinn, the former Gator defensive coordinator, what he's done in a very short time up in Washington. But primarily, Joey Sly, the brand new kicker here in Jacksonville. We'll get a little bit of info from Scott Jackson, again, of the Commander Radio Network and 94.1 FM in Virginia Beach. He comes up later on in the 10 o'clock hour. But as we do every night to kick it off right here on Hacker After Dark, we give you a big deal of the night and Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
You know, last year we got frustrated with Trevor Lawrence. Some of us got upset with Trevor Lawrence, myself included. Throw myself into that mix as well. I'm not going to throw stones in a glass house. I was upset with some of his performances. I was upset with some of the decision-making problems that he had. Particularly, you think back to the Baltimore game. That was a comedy of errors. So, yeah. Trevor did not have the year in 2023 that we all sort of expected him to have. But what is obvious now is, goodness gracious, man, that quarterback class of 2021, that first round quarterback class that Trevor Lawrence was a part of, ugh. Other than Trevor, you got four busts, right? Can't you say that? Zach Wilson, huge bust in New York. Trey Lance barely saw the field in San Francisco. He's now in Dallas. Justin Fields was probably the second best quarterback in that group. But he was shown the door in Chicago. He's now the backup in Pittsburgh. Traded for a fourth round pick. And Mac Jones, who was also in that first round, is now Trevor Lawrence's backup here in Jacksonville. So as hard as we can be on Trevor, as sometimes as disappointed as we are in some of the things Trevor Lawrence does, I think it's very clear, plain as day, that of all the quarterbacks in 2021, the Jaguars clearly got the best one. It's not even close, not even in the conversation to be debated. Trevor needs to improve in certain aspects of his game, absolutely. But good heavens, from Zach Wilson to Trey Lance, Justin Fields to Mac Jones. What an awful, awful first round of quarterbacks. Now, Mac Jones did some nice things in New England. I thought he was dealt a pretty raw hand. I thought Justin Fields did some nice things in Chicago. That, to me, that's a puzzling one. Look, I'm not surprised Chicago traded him because they have the opportunity to draft Caleb Williams. All right, I can understand that. But nobody wanted Justin Fields. Nobody. He was rumored to Atlanta. He was rumored here. He was rumored there. Nothing. A fourth round pick is all it took to get Justin Fields? A fourth round pick. Trey Lance, San Francisco traded a bunch of draft picks to get him. That's what's really fascinating about the 49ers. That is arguably one of the worst trades in the history of the NFL. San Francisco making that trade for Trey Lance. With the draft capital they gave up, that was an abysmal trade. But because they got darn lucky, and I do mean darn lucky in finding Brock Purdy, it has not affected them. Horrible trade by the Niners. But it has not affected them like it probably should have because they got very lucky when they found Brock Purdy. And Zach Wilson was just a disaster in New York of epic proportions. I think he goes down among, you know, Ryan Leaf, Jamarcus Russell conversation for a quarterback that either goes one or two in the draft. Just awful in New York. Absolutely terrible. Denmark, what were you saying to me earlier? In the 2021 and 2022 drafts combined, like only a handful of guys are actually still on the team that drafted them?
Of the quarterbacks, yeah, only two, Trevor Lawrence and Brock Purdy. Every other quarterback is playing for a different team from the 21 and 22 draft class.
Crazy. And we're not talking about a long time ago. We're talking 36 months ago in Trevor's case, 24 months ago in the 22 or the 22 classes case. Boy, you know, you talk about throwing darts at a dartboard. It is a tough job in the late rounds of the draft, and apparently it's a tough job in the first round of the draft when it comes to quarterbacks. Because many, many, many more first-round quarterbacks in the last couple of years have absolutely been misses, have absolutely been busts as opposed to good picks. Here in Jacksonville, we have one of those good picks. Sometimes he looks like a great pick. Trevor Lawrence. He is now carrying the torch for the 21 draft class. Because Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones did not do that. We're not able to do that. We're not even close to holding up their end of the bargain. I can't imagine another draft 3 years later where four quarterbacks drafted in the first round are already on different teams. That's got to be a record. That's got to be something that stands by itself. I mean, that would be an ESPN stats and info type deal to look up, but I cannot imagine 3 years after five quarterbacks are taken in round one, 80% of them are now with different teams. That is insane. And the only one that remains is, of course, right here in Trevor Lawrence. 641-1010 on the phone line and on the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. The NCAA tournament, I guess, underway, right? I'm always a guy that really says it doesn't start till Thursday at noon, but we did have Wagner over Howard. That was a big one. Wagner over Howard. Right now, Colorado State is giving Virginia the beating in the two first four games tonight. Colorado State up 13 on Virginia. That's a battle of who's going to be the 10 seed in the Midwest region. And again, Gator fans, at this time tomorrow, you could be doing a little scouting. Remember, Boise State, Colorado, they play tomorrow night. The winner of that game plays Florida on Friday, scheduled for 4:30 Eastern up there in Indianapolis. We'll do a lot on the NCAA tournament, certainly. We had Mark Wise on last night. We'll continue that conversation tonight and tomorrow, and we'll begin it with my buddy Brent Beard. You see him on First Coast News. You also get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Let's talk a little NCAA tournament, and let's talk a little spring football. Florida was on the field today. Florida State had their first spring practice today with head coach Mike Norvell. They got to replace a lot of guys in Tallahassee. They got to replace Jared Verse and Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman, Trey Benson, Braden Fisk, Jones and Green in the secondary. You just go on down the line. And, of course, life after Jordan Travis. Now it's DJ Uiagalelei on the, behind the scenes there for the Seminoles at quarterback. And we'll see what Mike Norvell does. Remember, a brand new contract, brand new extension for him. Spring practice in Tallahassee begins today. We'll talk about all that and more with Brent Beard. He's next on a Tuesday night edition of Hacker After Dark here in the city of Jacksonville. We're glad you're with us. It's 1010 XL and it's 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville. It is a Tuesday evening and we are glad you are with us. The NCAA tournament begins, well, it effectively began earlier this evening. Of course, the round of 64 begins Thursday at noon. There are a number of Southeastern Conference teams, including the Florida Gators. And speaking of the SEC, spring football going on for every SEC school. And in Missouri's case, they're already done with spring football, if you can believe that. We got a lot to discuss with that. Let me bring in my friend Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News, and you always get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Mr. Beard, how are you, sir?
Just a wonderful time of year. I mean, it's still cool enough to appreciate it, and we've got the tournament that is basically going on the whole week, and then you've got a different team almost opening up every day in spring football. It's a very undervalued time of year, but it's one of the better ones.
No, I agree. March, April, I really like these 2 months outside of football season, no question about it. And let's get into the NCAA tournament, Brent. I want to obviously spend some time on Todd Golden in Florida, but, boy, a good year for SEC basketball. A lot of teams in the tournament. A lot of teams think they can make runs, although you look at, I believe, Auburn and Alabama. Well, you talk about traveling. Goodness gracious. They got to go way out west, both of those Alabama schools. But how did you think the SEC fared as far as Selection Sunday?
Well, I thought they did great. I mean, we remember well the years when the SEC struggled to get three teams. But now they are – and I don't know if it's going to play out this way, but they are easily one of the better conferences, if not the best conference in the nation. I mean, they have really overtaken the ACC. I know some old blue blood folks would not agree with that, but I think that has happened. And right now you've got the two best conferences are probably the SEC and the Big 12. Now, again, the committee puts a lot of these teams into a situation where they're not going very far. I mean, Mississippi State in an 8 plays Michigan State in a 9. And then after that, you've got to play a 1, which is never easy by any stretch. South Carolina is just glad to be there. I don't think they'll last very long. Kentucky, a lot of people are in love with Kentucky, and but particularly them to go in the Final Four, the Elite Eight. And I'm just thinking, I know they've got the talent, but we just haven't seen that. That really has not been the way they are. This is the best Tennessee team we've seen in years, and they may actually be able to get past the first or second round that Rick Barnes usually doesn't do with Connect. that's going to be helping them. Auburn is good enough to where they might could win the whole thing, but they're not going to beat UConn. I do think Florida's good enough to where they can make the Sweet 16. You don't want to play A&M because A&M is the best offensive rebounding team in the nation. And they can actually go a round or two, but again, they're a 9 playing an 8. So that means you're playing a 1. And then Alabama has got Charleston. And unfortunately, Alabama has, I'm not going to say faded, but they've struggled toward the end with injuries. And they, look, they could not defend you and me on the court. So they've got their flaws and they've got their faults, but it is still a wonderful year for the SEC.
Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. Yeah, that Alabama-Charleston first-round matchup in, I believe, Spokane, Washington, that'll be highly attended by the locals out there. I mean,
family and friends only, yeah.
Good heavens. You're going to take two southeastern schools and then transport them up to the Great Northwest for first-round action. Let's get to Florida. A good year for Todd Golden. Unfortunately, the Micah Hand locked an injury. We'll see how they can overcome that. But, Brent, there were questions about Golden. You and I had that conversation at the end of last year right about this time. And quite frankly, there were questions about him 2 months ago. They turned it around at the midway point. He is rewarded with a 2-year contract extension. And I think certainly it looks like now, Brent, the arrow pointing very much up for Todd Golden and this Gator basketball team moving forward.
Yeah, there's no question. The shame of it is, you would think as a 7. And look, I thought they should have been a 6. If you're playing in your championship game of your conference, why should you fall? I know Auburn beat them handily, but my stars, I mean, they played from Thursday to Sunday. And should be rewarded for that instead of penalized for it. And the reason and the way they're penalized for it is they after their first round game, they turned right around. You're going to have to deal with Marquette. But look, this is a really good basketball team. That they have certainly proven that they are really good inside out. They do have, and I'm really hated to see the injury to Micah, but the good thing is they've got some depth. Walter Clayton is tremendous. Condon and Samuel are. If they get a break or two, I would not be shocked if they're able to go at least a couple of rounds. But I think Todd Golden has given Gator fans a lot of hope. Because frankly, Hack, you could argue that going down to the last 3 weeks of the SEC schedule, Florida played as well as anybody in the league.
No, I agree with that. And I was talking to Mark Wise from ESPN about this last night. I agree with you that Florida should have been a 6, but then the NCAA came out with those 1 through 68 rankings, literally the way the committee seated them. And take South Carolina. South Carolina was number 24. Florida was number 25. So what does that mean? Well, it means Florida's the highest ranked 7 seed, if you will, and South Carolina was the lowest ranked 6 seed. South Carolina as a 6 has a much tougher road. They have Oregon in round 1 in the 6-11, and then if they beat Oregon, they get Creighton in round 2 more than likely, whereas Florida as a 7 plays the winner of the play-in game between, what is that, Boise State and Colorado, and then if they were to win that game, they get Marquette. Creighton beat the pants off of Marquette in the regular season. So I'm trying to look at that as a positive, that the number, people don't like the 7, but if you look at it, I think Florida as a 7, Brent, probably has a little bit of easier road to the Sweet 16 potentially than South Carolina does as a 6.
Well, and if they can beat Shaka Smart and Marquette, that would be an incredible feather in their cap. Look, let's just pretend they can do that and get to the Sweet 16. Uh, did Did any Gator fans think at the beginning of the year this would be a Sweet 16 team?
Not at all. And the way I phrased it last night, and I'm curious your thoughts, to me, the season's already been a success because you're back
Absolutely.
In the tournament.
Yes.
A loss on Friday to either Boise State or Colorado would probably leave a bad taste in your mouth. It may be a tad disappointing. To me, Brent, if they win on Friday, everything else is gravy because they're going to be a huge underdog, a 7-2
sure.
more than likely in Marquette, even though Marquette has injury problems themselves. Florida's not supposed to win that game. So you win round one, you get to the round of 32, overwhelming success if it's not already a success so far.
Agree totally. And it's going to be fun to be able to see what goes on. And I'll do this in about half a minute. But I was impressed with the selection show. Greg Gumbel wasn't there, unfortunately. Adam Zucker did fine. The greatest thing they did on that show was they went to the brackets almost immediately after they got to talking about Gumbel and wishing him well in his family. They went straight to opening up the brackets. You may remember this a few years ago. They tried to get cute with that show. They had Barkley and a couple other of the NBA brethren on there, and it was awful. But heck, the suspense is over the unveiling of the brackets. And there, and look, there's no use to get cute with that and make that hard because the look, you've got people on the edge of their seat waiting to see if their team's going in. That is the easiest show of the year to do.
A couple of more for Brent Beard. You get him locally on First Coast News. You also get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Brent to Tallahassee as Mike Norvell and the Florida State Seminoles kick off spring practice this week. A lot of change in Tallahassee. They lost a lot of guys that were big contributors last year, including obviously Jordan Travis, Jared Verse, Keon Coleman, just to name a few. Your thoughts on Florida State heading into 2024?
They're excited. You could really tell that when the coaches were interviewed and they were talking about this team that is coming back on the offensive line, Jeremiah Byers, Julian Ormella, Ty Hilton. Those are guys that they've talked about that they like. Lawrence Toifili is coming back at running back. Rodell Williams from Alabama, who has gained about 10 pounds. He's almost bigger than some tight ends, and he's really a tough player, is going to add a lot to them, I believe. I'll be honest with you, I am still not sure if DJ Uiagalelei is who they need to have at quarterback. I mean, the jury's out on that. Hopefully he'll be okay all the way around, but they think they've got speed and they've got enough guys coming back to where they're going to be. Well, I'm not saying they're going to win the conference and be 12-0 again, but they are and could very be good. So, and they've got a couple of guys. Eric Little comes over from Alabama. We mentioned Benson and also Williams. So, frankly, if Uiagalelei can play well, and I think they've got enough early games, particularly with like Georgia Tech and Ireland, I mean, that they'll win that game. That's a venue game more than it is a real game. So I can see why they're excited in Tallahassee.
Of course, Cal, Stanford, and SMU, really interesting ACC trio that are joining the league this year. Brent, with the teams that the ACC has, is it still as simple as it's either going to be Florida State or Clemson? I mean, is that where we're still at?
Yep. Now, I will give NC State credit. NC State is one of the few teams that's like won eight games in the last 4 years, and that does mean something, but they can't quite get over the hump. I mean, even Georgia Tech's a little bit better over the last few years, but yes, that they're still the two best teams. Again, there's some talk about Miami. Could Cam Ward get them over the hump and at least get them? And I think they will probably be better. But yes, Clemson, Florida State are still the two teams to beat.
Brent, as we begin to wrap up, give us a few tidbits from Gainesville. Spring football back in session after spring break for the Gators. And I see in your notes here a couple of the transfers that Florida brought in, thought very highly of when you rate the transfer portal guys this last offseason.
Oh, yeah, Joyce Lankman from Penn. Now, again, people cannot get caught up in where these guys come from because a lot of these guys are players. It doesn't matter. I know people wish that was Penn State, but I get it. Now, look, Pump Howard of South Carolina, I've heard you talking about him, and I know you've covered him. Being a local guy, he's a linebacker.
Have you ever talked to him, Brent?
I haven't, but I've seen interviews and so forth.
He is an unbelievably impressive young man.
Yeah, yes, yeah, I would agree with that. And frankly, once he gets going, he can wreak a lot of havoc. So I think he could be a real plus for them. Jameer Grimsley from Alabama, the defensive back. He didn't play that much, but he has a lot of potential. So, Hank, there's three of them. But getting back to Howard, Howard is one of those guys that they really need to come around and do what they think he can.
Final moments, Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, as we begin to say goodbye, let's go down to Coral Gables. What do you got on the Hurricanes this week?
I think there's a lot of optimism that they just got back from spring break and everybody came back intact. So that's a good thing, too. I mean, right now, the excitement over Cam Ward is you can reach out and touch it. Frankly, from what you read and see and hear right now, so they're very excited about that. They think Xavier Restrepo at wide receiver will have another good year along with Jacoby George. Jalen Rivers, the offensive lineman, is really good. Anas Cooper, Francis Maga, and Mark Fletcher at running back. Francis is an offensive lineman. Fletcher's a running back. He really had a good year last year as a freshman. So they've got some guys who are coming back who they think could really be playmakers for them. But again, Hank, you and I say this every year, and I hate to, but it bears repeating. The problem there is Mario Cristobal is a tremendous recruiter, but he's still learning about being a game day coach. And what they've got to get over is they have, and he did this at Oregon, they have just an absolutely inexplicable, mystifying loss every year, like the Georgia Tech loss, or 2 years ago, the Middle Tennessee loss. So my point is, if they can really get going with Ward and they can avoid these unmitigated awful losses, could they be a lot better? And we think they might.
That's a thought, and that's certainly a big one. August 31st against Florida, and you talk about Jalen Rivers. He's back at Miami for like year 8. I remember talking to him at Oak Leaf, and it seems like a long time ago, and he's been in Miami. He's played a lot of football. Brent, we got 60 seconds. Of the SEC teams in the NCAA tournament, how many are left when you and I are talking next Tuesday?
I would say probably Kentucky, Tennessee, Auburn, and I'm going to throw. I think either Florida or A&M are going to be left. So I'm going to say out of the eight, how about conservatively? We'll say four. and have half of them. Look, if you could get four or three in the Sweet 16, that would be a real credible season for the SEC.
It would be phenomenal if they got four or even three in the Sweet 16. And I tend to agree with you. If Tennessee lost, it would be an upset. If Kentucky lost, it would be an upset. And I think at least one of those other six will find their way into the Sweet 16. Hopefully, it's the orange and blue down in Gainesville for our Gator fans here in the city of Jacksonville. You get Brent Beard on First Coast News. You also get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, as always, brother, I enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. More spring ball. We'll preview the Sweet 16 as well. Thank you, my friend.
Look forward to it, pal. Take care.
Always enjoy talking with my buddy Brent Beard. Again, you see him on First Coast News. You get him weekly here on Hacker After Dark. Denmark of the award-winning podcast, Denmark and Marsh, or I guess it's Marsh and Denmark. You are a Gator alum. You have the orange and blue blood pumping through your veins.
Not really.
Well, that's a shame, I guess. Why is that, out of curiosity?
I'm just playing. I mean, I grew up a fan, but I'm an alum, sure.
All right, so Florida basketball. Win on Friday, everything else is gravy. A loss on Friday, is it a disappointment? Kind of where are you going into the tournament?
You should win on Friday, regardless of the team. You get to the round of 32, it's a fine season. After that, Sweet 16, it's a really good season after that. Lead Eight, great. And then, obviously, from then on.
I mean, they'd have to pull a pretty big upset to get to the Sweet 16. I mean, they would. Odds are they're playing a two in Marquette. Marquette, according to the committee, is a top eight team nationally. So I don't really like the narrative that I'm hearing, not from you, but from other people, that it's Sweet 16 or disappointing. Florida would have to pull a big upset to get to the Sweet 16. That's why, to me, you win Friday, you get to Sunday, you see what happens. Now, the one good thing that Florida has going for them, even with the injury to Hanlock, then Marquette's got injury problems too. A couple of their guys may not be around, so that might even the playing field a little bit. But first things first, all right? Colorado and Boise State, they play tomorrow night. Florida gets the winner, and the committee has that as a 7-10 game. Translation, they think Florida and either Colorado or Boise State are very compatible. So it's going to be some work for Florida to get to Sunday, but if they do, and if they do pull off that upset against presumably Marquette and get to the Sweet 16, at that point, it's an overwhelming success to the year in year number two for Todd Golden, who got a two-year contract extension last week for his solid work this basketball season. More on the Gator basketball team coming up later on tonight, certainly tomorrow and Thursday on Hacker After Dark. Coming up next, back into the world of the Jaguars and the National Football League. We got a new kicker in town. This one's actually going to come to Jacksonville, unlike Will Lutz. Joey Sly, former Washington Commander. Let's go up to Virginia. Commander Radio Network, my buddy Scott Jackson, formerly of the ball here in Jacksonville. He now works on the Commander Radio Network. Let's talk about the new Jaguar kicker. What are the Jaguars getting in kicker Joey Sly? That's next. Hacker After Dark on a Tuesday. It's 1010XL and it's 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. For the second time in the last week, the Jaguars have a brand new kicker, except this time it appears like it's actually going to happen. Remember, Will Lutz agreed to terms, then had a change of heart, wanted to stay in Denver. So the Jaguars today bring in Joey Sly, formerly of the Washington Commanders, to assume the kicking duties here in Jacksonville. With that, our guy up there is Scott Jackson, 94.1 up in Virginia Beach. Of course, formerly back in the day at AM 600 here in Jacksonville, and he's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Scott, how we doing?
Very good, Ryan. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Scott, always appreciate it. So we basically traded kickers. You guys get Brandon McManus. We get Joey Sly. What about Joey Sly? I know he has a long of 61 last year. I guess that stood out when I looked at his numbers. What are the Jaguars getting now in the kicking department?
Well, he's definitely a guy who's got a big foot, big leg. You know, he is a big guy himself. He looks like he's not a kicker. He does not come off like you wouldn't pick him out to be the kicker on your team when you see him in person. But I think part of his problem over the last couple seasons in Washington was, he missed a lot of extra points, and also just some inconsistency from him, I think. Even though, I think overall the body of work was pretty good. I mean, it is excellent in terms of kicking it out of the end zone. You're not going to worry about teams returning on him if that's what they want him to do. So that part of it's good. There was just some inconsistency, I think, that, and now with the regime changes, I think it was an easy thing. He was a free agent. It would have been interesting had he been under contract that they would have, kept him or cut him. To me, part of his problem last year in particular was the long snapper was terrible. And they ended up cutting him, and I think there were some times where Joey would take the heat for it, and in reality was the timing was thrown off because the snap was bad, and Tressway, who was their holder, always had to feel like he was doing a Harry Houdini act to try to save the hold, because the snap was so lousy.
Well, it's interesting. Scott Jackson here with us, and you mentioned the extra point inconsistency, and maybe you just brought it up there. I think 88% for his career, you'd like to think extra points are automatic. That was concerning, Scott, when I saw that looking at his numbers.
Yeah, and there was a couple of them that they were in games and it was tight games. You're like, oh, that's going to come back and hurt you and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, look, there were so many problems with this team last year. for me, Joey Sly was way down the list of things that I would even have thought of this offseason. But, they had so many free agents. He was one of them. Obviously, there is a connection here, Brandon McManus and Adam Peters, the new general manager, who – he was there in Denver with McManus, so thanks a lot to McManus. And I think they just they might have saved a few bucks, too, and just thought that was a better fit for what they wanted to do. But, yeah, I think the whole thing with Sly is if he can be more consistent with the extra points. I think overall field goal-wise, he was pretty solid. He got a big leg, like you said, that 61-yarder last year. And a big 59-yarder with a team upset the Eagles a couple seasons ago on Monday Night Football, too, up in Philadelphia. So, yeah, I mean, he's shown that he can hit from long range.
Well, that's good. I mean, you'd like to think 40 yards and in is automatic. People always look at, 49 and longer for a kicker. He had the 61-yarder. You mentioned the 59-yarder a couple of years ago. You think, by and large, 50 yards and out, Joey Sly is pretty good?
Yeah, I think he is pretty good there. Like I said, some of the inconsistencies, some of the other ranges from time to time and the extra point thing. But, again, it's hard to kind of figure out watching it, okay, how much was that on him last year in particular, or on their issues, their long snapper, who was just awful, and it was amazing that he made it out of training camp, frankly, with a job. But another one of these strange things that Ron Rivera did when he was here. I think the other thing that hurt Sly was he was among the long list of former Panthers that were brought in here. They were bringing back, some of the great 49er teams from the 80s or something. It was kind of funny. Like, if you were a Panther, you were always going to be brought in here if you're available.
Scott Jackson, 94.1 up in Virginia Beach, also has been a part of the Commander Radio Network. Scott, it's been a changing of the guard up there the last 3 months. You and I haven't talked since all the changes. Former Gator defensive coordinator Dan Quinn, now the new head coach up there. They've had a ton of player movement. What's the thought about the direction of the Commanders heading into 2024?
Well, I mean, look, it's hard to say there's no way to go but up, but, I mean, really, you were so horrible last year. The season they had, picking 2 overall, kind of proves that. Starting over at quarterback, obviously they moved on from Sam Howell. They brought in Marcus Mariota to basically be the veteran in the room, but they're going to make a selection of number 2, and if they get that right, it's probably a really good feeling, right, moving forward. If they nail that pick, if they miss it, oh, boy, hopefully they got a good backup plan, as they did in San Francisco, where Adam Peters comes from, when they missed on Trey Lance. But, yeah, I mean, I think, most of it's been positive. I think, really, Ron Rivera's time had run its course. Even the year before, you could have, if it would have been a normal circumstance with an ownership, I think there would have been a change. And it was just last year was just, holding on. And they were trying to be fair to him, the new owners, where they got in so late, it was hard for them to, really do anything. But I think Josh Harris has been received very well, the new owner and, his group. And, Adam Peters looked like the best hire the offseason in terms of front office. Now, Dan Quinn was not the most popular hire here in terms of a head coaching candidate. I think people had really got set on the idea of an offensive-minded coach. And the market really didn't materialize that way. I mean, Ben Johnson chose to stay in Detroit. And that kind of, from there, I think they pivoted to the guy they thought, certainly he's got the you know his baseline, right? Like, you know what Dan Quinn is as a head coach, and some of these other guys that are coordinators never done it before. You really have no idea what you're getting into. But with Dan Quinn, I think you know when he was in Atlanta and things were going well with the offense, they were a good team. And then, you know, they had some issues the next year with their defense, you know, as well. They had injuries the next couple seasons, and obviously that they ended up moving on from him in 2020. But I think overall he's been a real positive guy. He's been real out, as you know, very outgoing guy, and I think that has helped, you know, maybe ease some of the uneasiness for those that didn't really like the hire.
Scott, final question. Obviously, with Dan Quinn's arrival, with the changing of the guard, you mentioned Sam Howell now off to Seattle. The number two pick, we assume now Caleb Williams is a surefire number one after the Justin Fields trade over the weekend. Jaden Daniels or Drake May? What's Washington leaning right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it depends on what week we're talking. You know, for a while, it really looked like Drake May. Then it looked like Jaden Daniels. You know, you've heard some stuff since the combine about J.J. McCarthy with a lot of different teams. It sure looks like, to me, Jaden Daniels, you're talking about the Cliff Kingsbury offense, which fit in that very well. And obviously the thing that scares you about him is his frame. Can he take the pounding of the NFL? Can he slide? You know, more importantly, did he play baseball at any point in his life? Did he slide? That would be really important because he took some really tough hits in the SEC. And you're like, you know, in the NFL, there's a bit you knocked out. Hopefully, if he is the guy, he learns his lesson no matter where he goes next year. And I think Drake May, you know, what people sleep on is, you know, Phil Longo was his OC a couple seasons ago. And, they, you know, he's a guy who comes from this air raid system, much like Cliff Kingsbury. So I think May could play the system as well. So I think they've got some options there. And it's just going to boil down to who they think, you know, is better suited for what they want to do in the long term and who can understand it and who can develop better. Who's obviously the most coachable of those two guys. So it's a huge decision. I mean, right out of the gate for this new group. I mean, if they nail it, like I said, they're looking good. But you know how it goes. If you miss it in the quarterback position, man, that's something that really can throw the build back many, many years.
Yeah, a lot of interesting veterans brought in as well. Bobby Wagner, Dante Fowler, among them. Should be a very interesting season up there in the nation's capital. Scott Jackson, 94.1 up in Virginia Beach and the Commanders Radio Network. Scott, always appreciate the time, brother. We'll do it again later this summer.
All right, thank you, Ryan. Appreciate your time.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
1 hour down, 1 hour go. We'll take it on midnight tonight. 1010XL, 92.5 FM, our late night show here on a Tuesday. NCAA tournament tonight. Well, I mean, it is. It's tournament action, all right? It's the Dayton games, the play-in games, whatever you want to call them. Wagner defeated Howard 71-68. And as a result of that, Wagner advances now, and their reward is North Carolina, Thursday afternoon at 2:45. Also going on right now, Colorado State and Virginia. Virginia has 29 points in 30 minutes of action. Colorado State up 47-29. Colorado State with a win would advance to play Texas on Thursday at 7 o'clock. So those are the two games tonight. Tomorrow, you got a couple of games, including Boise State and Colorado. That's tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. The winner of that game will move on to play the Florida Gators on Friday at about 4:30 Eastern in Indianapolis. So Gator fans, you have the opportunity to do a little scouting, if you will, to watch your Friday opponent tomorrow. Hopefully that game goes to triple overtime between Colorado and Boise State tomorrow night in Dayton. Coming up in the 11 o'clock hour tonight, Will Helms, College Football Network. We'll do a little draft talk, a little college talk as well with Will Helms. You know, Pro Football Network, obviously such a big deal. They're really taking off. College Football Network, under the same umbrella, they're probably right behind. I think College Football Network is a very up-and-coming website. It'll be where PFN is probably in a year or two. Will Helms is one of the main guys at College Football Network. He will join us at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. Coming up in less than 10 minutes, my buddy Justin Barney of Channel 4. Little high school talk. We'll talk about potential pay increases for high school coaches. Denmark, I know you have thoughts on that, but we'll also spend a lot of time on the Jacksonville Jaguars with Justin and what they have done over the last couple of weeks. Denmark, you were at the Bob Hayes Invitational, the track meet. And by the way, I saw video of that, and I know how big a deal it is every year. It's certainly a very, very big deal, not only in Jacksonville, but regionally. Man alive, the videos I saw, what a crowd out there at UNF on Saturday.
Yeah, teams coming from Atlanta, Miami, all over the state, all over the region. Greg Coleman started the coaches meeting. He said that we got to move the deadline up next year because so many international teams are trying to come to the Bob Hayes next year. So for logistic reasons. So it's only going to get bigger now that it's moved from UNF. It's a top-tier track meet, definitely, in the region. I mean, you had teams from Atlanta. You had Asante Samuel Sr. His daughter was there. She won the 100 and the 1 meter hurdles. You remember the FSU player Brad Jennings?
Yeah.
Back from Layton. Okay, so he's got a daughter that runs the hurdles. She came in second. There's talent all over the place, man, and there was a lot of teams here in the area that did pretty well.
Brad Jennings was a pretty good defensive lineman, if memory serves, for Florida State back in the day. Pardon the ignorance here. Any of the people that were at the Bob Hayes, any shot at the Olympics in the summer?
Christian Miller, there's a kid from Creekside. He broke the meet record for the 200 and a 20.5.
Yeah, I talked to him a couple of weeks ago at that high school media day.
For the ones that don't know, he won the Junior Olympics or the Junior National Championships last year, ran like a 10.0 in the 100, which is – like, very few people on the planet can run that.
He's committed to Georgia, right?
Yeah, he's the number one track prospect in the country.
Yeah.
He'll have a shot to run for the Olympics probably later this year and down the road, next 4 or 8 years.
Interesting. No, that's good, man. It's obviously a big deal. And, look, all the kids that did well, all the student-athletes that did well, and even the ones that did their best, man, we commend all of you. The Bob Hayes is a big, big deal every single year here in Northeast Florida. Obviously a big deal, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and they've been wheeling and dealing over the past couple of weeks, bringing in a lot of free agents, had some guys leave, including Calvin Ridley. We'll discuss all of it with Justin Barney of Channel 4. He is next. Hacker After Dark, our late night show on a Tuesday here in Jacksonville, Florida, and we're glad you're with us. It's 1010XL, and it's 92.5 FM. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Let me welcome in Will Helms of College Football Network, who's done a lot of mock drafts with Pro Football Network. Of course, they're under the same umbrella, and Will is always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Will, how you doing?
Doing well, Ryan. How you doing?
Hey, Will, we're good, man. Thank you for the time. And talk about College Football Network a little bit. I think most people know about Pro Football Network. We have a lot of PFN guys on, but College Football Network is an up-and-coming site as well.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple years ago, Pro Football Network started up and, you know, started to see some success. And part of that, I guess, four-year, five-year plan was to start up the College Football Network side. So right now it's just me and a couple other guys that are kind of, you know, working on the scouting side and the College Football Network side. But we're hopefully going to see that start to grow kind of the way that Pro Football Network has. You know, we work together and do a lot of that kind of stuff, but hopefully bringing the same high-quality content on the college side that those guys bring on the pro side.
Yeah, absolutely. We love the folks at PFN, no question about that. All right, well, let's get into the Jaguars. Let's get into this draft class. And before we look ahead, let's take a look back. 2 years ago, the Jaguars were in Indianapolis. They had the number one pick in the draft. And Trayvon Walker went absolutely nuts up there. 2 years into his career, amidst the collapse the Jaguars had at the end of this season, I thought Trayvon Walker was actually one of the bright spots, the way he played down the stretch. What are your thoughts about Walker and your thoughts on him moving forward?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting because I did not love the pick at the time, just being that he's an edge rusher that really had to develop as a pass rusher. And that's not really, for me, something that I would be looking for, you know, that high in the draft. But he's really developed as a pass rusher in the past couple of years. And I think that that's part of his game that he's going to continue to get better at. and a part of his game that is really going to start to, you know, become a strength, because the rest of that defensive line is really stout. And I could see them going with another guy this year, but that really is turning into a strength of the team, which is, you know, one of the more important position groups on the team to, you know, see that long-term success.
And we knew this about Walker, right? I mean, all the talk 2 years ago was Aiden Hutchinson was more polished. He might have the bigger impact early. You had to wait it out with Trayvon Walker a little bit. But I think clearly Walker did show some glimpses here in 2023.
Absolutely. I think you could say that about a lot of the Jaguars' young players. You know, we're looking at guys like Anton Harrison really played well down the stretch last season. And I think that that's something that the Jaguars are going to have to continue to hit on these first-round picks if they are going to take that next step forward from being, you know, a borderline playoff team to being a real contender. And I think it's something that they've done well the past couple of years and something that they should continue to do well going forward.
Will Helms of College Football Network. Will, with the Trayvon Walker draft, Devin Lloyd was also taken in the first round. Devin has done some nice things. He's accumulated some nice statistics, but clearly, to me, the arrow might be pointing much more up on Walker than it is on Lloyd right now. What's your thought on Devin heading into year number three?
I really liked him coming out of college. I really liked him. Knew that he would throw up a bunch of statistics. He did in college. He had a ton of tackles in college, and he continues to do that in the NFL. I think in pass coverage, he needs to continue to get just a little bit better. The athleticism's there. But sometimes it seems like some of his instincts are just a half second behind, which at this level is something that can really show on film. So as he continues to get better at that and develop as a coverage guy, I think that he's a guy that, don't give up on him yet. He could be really, really good in the future.
Yeah, I agree. There's some signs there. Like I said, there's glimpses. You would just like to see him put it all together. You mentioned Anton Harrison. A year ago, Will, up in Indianapolis, truthfully, I didn't know much about Anton Harrison. I learned pretty quickly in talking to folks out in Norman, Oklahoma, what type of guy he was. And I got to tell you, among all the rookie offensive tackles last year, I think Anton Harrison might have been as good as any of them.
Yeah, he was definitely thrown in the fire, you know, from the start. But down the stretch, I think he allowed like four pressures down the last, you know, 5-6 weeks of the season. So he was really good down the stretch, you know, which is what we're looking for from a rookie. You know, we're going to have those growing pains early in the season, but if he can really start to put together some nice back-to-back-to-back games, it's something that really bodes well for the future.
Will Helms of College Football Network. Will, before we look at the 2024 draft class quickly, it's good that Anton Harrison performed well, because a couple of the Jaguar draft picks that were taken pretty early did not. Britton Strange out of Penn State, man, there just wasn't a lot there his rookie year. Tank Bigsby out of Auburn, I loved that pick at the time, but I was told by people that covered Auburn that he fumbles the ball, and he comes to Jacksonville, and what does he do? He fumbles the ball. So that's certainly an issue that he has to correct very quickly.
Yeah, and I think part of that is just learning to rely on his teammates, because people forget when he was at Auburn, his offense was terrible, and he really was the offense. And so a lot of those fumbles in college were really a guy trying to make a second or third effort when it might help to just kind of go down. You know, you're not going to take on the entire defense by yourself. And I think that that's just a tough habit to break. I'm still very high on him. I think that he could be very good. He's very explosive, breaks a lot of tackles. I did not think he got a lot of opportunities last season, and it, you know, partially was because if you can't trust him to hold on to the ball, you can't trust him to be in the game. But I do think he's a guy that can complement Etienne very well and be able to, you know, come off the bench and provide a spark.
It's a big season for the Jaguars, a big draft season. They need to do well in this draft, no question about it. So let's dive into the 24 draft class, Will. Obviously, the combine up in Indianapolis. Overall, in totality, before we really break it down, assess the class as a whole. Strong, average, weak. How would you phrase it?
I think there are three areas in this class that are really interesting to look at, and that's kind of the depth of some of the more important positions. This year is one of the first years in a while where the strength of this class is really in the most important positions. And so we're talking about positional value. I saw a guy today talking about positional value and how teams are actually paying attention to it. But I think it's more that the strength of this class lies in the tackles and the receivers and the corners, which are three of the most important positions. What's going to be interesting to me is the top of the offensive tackle class is substantially better than that second and third tier, whereas this is one of the deepest receiver classes we've ever seen. So do we see teams in the first round start to prioritize those offensive tackles where you can't get those guys later and leave receiver for day two or day three, because you're going to find some impact guys in the fifth, sixth, seventh round at receiver?
Do you believe, Will, and I know you've done a lot of mock drafts for Pro Football Network, do you believe the first three picks will be in some order Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May? Will it go quarterback, quarterback, quarterback right out of the gate?
I think it's going to be that way. If it's not those three teams, the draft capital that teams are going to be willing to move to get one of those guys in the beginning is going to be worth trading back for a team like maybe the Patriots that don't feel like they're ready for a quarterback. You're going to have a team trade up if the Patriots don't take that third quarterback. So in some order, it's going to be those three guys. I couldn't tell you what teams they're going to be, but it's going to be those three guys first.
Where are you on Caleb Williams? Do you believe he's the talent that most of your colleagues believe that he is?
I don't, actually. My biggest issue with him is he tends to drift back in the pocket, which is not a very good trait that translates well. Guys that tend to lose track of where they are in the pocket tend to sail balls over the middle. And you might be able to get away with that sometimes in the Pac-12, but I don't think you can get away with that in the pros. And so he's a guy that definitely has immense talent and tons of potential, but he's got to fix some of those pocket issues. He's got to fix some of the hero ball stuff. And I think part of that just comes from being on a more talented team than he was at USC. But there are some definite issues that I'm not convinced he'll get fixed right away.
Interesting. A couple of more for Will Helms of College Football Network. Where do you have Caleb? I mean, do you have Caleb Williams as your first quarterback, though?
I don't. I have Jaden Daniels as my first quarterback.
Wow.
I know that's a very different take than everybody else. The issue that I would have with Jaden Daniels is kind of the downside would be he does have a lot of production from some other guys that are going to go in the first round. That being said, he's electric. He's going to run in the 4.4s, if not the high 4.3s when he ends up running the 40. And he just got better every single year as he went. He's extremely accurate over the middle. He's a better thrower, I think, than people realize. I call it the Lamar Jackson effect, where when a guy is so electric as a runner, we tend to discount his abilities as a passer. And when you just look at purely just his arm versus the other guys at the top of the draft, yeah, Williams is probably a little bit higher than him, but he's not that far behind, if very far behind at all. And then you add to that that he's one of the most electric athletes in college football, regardless of position. He's a guy that I think can come in and really surprise some people right away.
I love that perspective because everybody is on Caleb Williams. I love the fact that you're willing to be different a little bit and you have Jaden Daniels ranked over him. The first non-quarterback to go, it'll be Marvin Harrison Jr., correct?
It's got to be Marvin Harrison Jr. This guy, we use the term generational prospect way too often. Depends on, you know, how much a generation is, but at worst, he's the best receiver prospect in 10 years.
Will Helms, College Football Network. What is it about Marvin Harrison that makes him the receiver that he is?
So I laughed. The Ringer every year does a comp article that's kind of tongue-in-cheek and kind of making fun of the fact that us in the media industry love a good player comp when we're looking at draft picks. And so the player comp, they said, is if Marvin Harrison Sr. had a very tall, very fast son that played football. And you know, as tongue-in-cheek as that is, it's accurate. I mean, he's 6'4". He's got some of the best body control you'll ever see. He's got some ridiculously good hands, and he's got speed that translates. It's not just that he's going to run in the 4.3s. He's going to run in the 4.3s, and you see that with the tracking technology that we have. He's one of the fastest players in college football, regardless of position, last year at 6'4", 205.
I've seen a lot of people talk about a guy we're very familiar with down here, and that's Brock Bowers of Georgia. I've literally seen the sentence, the best tight end prospect we've ever seen. Is that overstating it? Where are you with Brock Bowers?
to me, he's on the Kyle Pitts level. Now, you know, Atlanta's not using Kyle Pitts like they should. But I have a few concerns over the fact that his blocking is not quite as polished as a lot of those, you know, one of the things that makes George Kittle so great, which is one of the comps that we see, is he's a well above average blocker. Whereas Brock Bowers is a little bit below average as a blocker, you're really getting a really big slot receiver, which is great. I would not put him in the generational category, but he's definitely in the top 10 overall prospects for me.
You know, and we have a guy here in Jacksonville and Evan Engram that just caught, what, 115 some odd passes this year. And I'm not saying Brock Bowers is going to be Evan Engram. The expectation is he's going to be better than Evan Engram. But is that the kind of player you think he is? Because Engram is basically a big wide receiver out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that Evan Engram, and he's played a lot of different roles over the course of his career. He's not going to run as many deep routes as a guy like Brock Bowers. I guess I should say that the other way. Brock Bowers is going to run a few more deep routes than we see out of Evan Engram, a lot more seams and things like that. But in terms of route running ability and just being a big receiver that's going to catch most passes, that is a really good comp between the two of them.
Final moments, Will Helms, College Football Network. All right, Will, let's get to the Jaguars. At 17, we see cornerback as a need. In fact, Trent Baalke kind of alluded to that earlier this week. I'm of the opinion they need to get better on both the interior O-line and the interior D-line. I go back to Week 18, season on the line against the Titans, and Tennessee just manhandled the Jaguars up and down the field. So I want a big ugly on the interior O-line or the interior D-line. What are your thoughts about the Jags at 17 and maybe even in the second round at 49?
With the Jags, I think the biggest hole is just a lack of physicality across the roster. They've got some guys that are physical, but I think at any position you're looking at, you're going to want a really physical player, whether that's a Brian Thomas Jr. At receiver or a Cooper DeJean at corner, or even one of those big uglies, you know, on the interior offensive line or defensive line. Whatever position they take, I think it's more important that they find a guy that can bring an edge and some physicality to the roster, because they kind of got soft down the stretch last year. And I think that bringing in a guy that, you know, if you're going to bring in a defensive tackle, make sure he's a guy that can get after the passer and can really disrupt the game. If you're going to bring in an offensive, interior offensive lineman, maybe bring in a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, who has positional versatility and is physical, you know, up front, and just bring some more physicality to the team, because I think that's something that the Jaguars lacked a lot last season.
Completely agree with you. Absolutely agree. And Jackson Powers Johnson, I've never in my life seen a player from Eugene, Oregon be more popular in Duval County, Florida than Jackson Powers Johnson is. That's all the fan base is talking about, primarily because most of them are done with Luke Fortner and they think the Fortner experiment is over at center. If Jackson Powers Johnson is sitting there at 17, would that be too early to take him?
No, I don't. And it's, again, we're talking about positional value and what teams think about that. It was actually a colleague of mine on the PFN scouting podcast, Ian Cummings, said the other day, well, if you can get a guy that's going to be, has the talent to be a 10-year starter, does it matter what position he plays? And that's kind of what you're getting with, with Powers Johnson. And there's nothing certain in this industry, but if you're going to look at excellent center prospects, he's among the best. You know, Tyler Linderbaugh last year was one of the best center prospects I've seen in years. And then this year, right after him, you have Powers Johnson. And so whereas center is probably not the most important position on the field, if you've got a guy that can come in and can start right away and be a high-level starter immediately, I think it's worth taking him no matter where you are in the first round.
Yeah, we have Ian on a bunch. He does a great job over there at PFN. Final moments here with Will Helms. Will, leave us with this. I guess 2019, I believe, was the year we had 140 underclassmen declare for the draft. This year, the number was down to 54. Now, that's NIL. That's transfer portal. We know why that's happening. People are staying in college. But from a draft perspective, boy, fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, it's going to be kind of lean, right? I mean, you want to hit some home runs early to mid rounds, because the late rounds could be a problem.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting this year because I do think this is a deeper class than normal, just in the sense of the guys that did declare. This is a really talented class. I think next year is going to be the issue because I don't think next year's class is quite as deep. And so when you're looking at that, you know, the depth of this class kind of offsets that just a little bit. But I do think it's a trend that we're going to see. You know, I think I saw the other day that it's the least underclassmen that have declared since like 2004, 2005. Teams are going to have to really be good in their scouting departments and be able to find those late round finds. It's not like hitting on a seventh rounder is super common anyway, but having to, having to find a really good player day three when there's slim pickings is going to be difficult for every team.
Will, tell the good folks here in Jacksonville about College Football Network and what they can expect when they head on over to the website.
Absolutely. So we are in the midst of our off-season content. We are looking at going through the combine right now, going through the draft, but also looking at those things for next year. So looking at things like quarterback battles in the spring, looking at things like who is returning. There are so many transfer portal. There's so much with recruiting right now. Who is returning? Who are going to be the top players this year? And we cover every corner of college football. We cover all now 134 FBS teams, thanks to Kennesaw State this year. So they can be looking at, we've got lots of content coming out all the way up until we start the season. And then, of course, in season, we are loaded with content.
Oh, that's terrific, man. Next time we have you on, we'll do a tutorial on the Florida Gators because they got problems their own right with that schedule coming up here in 2024. Will Helms of College Football Network. Will, really enjoyed the conversation, man. This is the first time you and I have talked. It won't be the last. Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Boy, what a couple of weeks it's been for the Jacksonville Jaguars. A lot of comings, a lot of goings, a franchise tag mixed in, and a roster transformation as the Jaguars have added in excess of 9 or 10 new guys that will be a part of the 53-man roster, and that doesn't even take into account what's going to happen next month at the NFL Draft. Let's talk Jags with my buddy Justin Barney of Channel 4. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Justin, how you doing?
Not too bad, Hack. Thanks. Coming off a tough week of players, and you know, you get paid to watch golf, so that's a challenging one. But yeah, a lot of Jaguars news to follow up after the golf week, and a lot of it to discuss.
Yeah, it's a great time of year. I mean, you got the NCAA tournament. We got the players, as you mentioned, with an unbelievable finish with Scottie Scheffler winning for the second year in a row. And then the Jaguars, Justin, have been maybe the most active team in free agency. Before we look at the moves individually, just your thoughts on what the Jaguars have done here in totality over the last 10 days.
I like it. I mean, they hit some significant positions of need. I think at center was the biggest one for me going into the offseason, followed by interior defensive line help, and they addressed both of those. A lot of moves, kind of a lot of sly moves too. You had Ronald Darby, a veteran in the secondary, to replace Darius Williams, and just some moves that may not send the shockwaves to the fan base, but some much needed moves to bring stability to that offensive line, to bring a little bit of reinforcements at receiver, and shoring up that interior defensive line. So a lot of shrewd moves and a couple big moves that I really liked.
You obviously covered Mac Jones when he was the quarterback at Bowles. He now comes back home after a failed experiment there with New England. What's your thought on Mac Jones coming back to Jacksonville?
I love it, and I wish I was at the press conference last week to chat with him. It's been a while since I've talked to Mac, and a great kid in high school, great family, and people in high school. I covered Mac for his time in Bowles, and I never thought he was Alabama type quarterback just because you saw such little sample size of him on the high school football fields on Friday nights. I mean, those Bowles teams that he was on were so good that Mac did not play a lot in the second half of those games. I mean, he was on the bench a lot of times early third quarter because Bowles was up so big in those games. And he was committed to Kentucky originally, ended up signing with Bama, was a finalist for the Heisman Trophy, and of course parlayed that into a first round draft pick, and didn't work out in New England. But I love the move because again, it's low risk and the potential for a bigger payoff. And you know, if whoever's the loser of the backup quarterback battle in training camp. I mean, Jacksonville could flip a Beathard or flip a Mac Jones to another team and really probably recoup that sixth round pick and a little bit more. If you look around the league in terms of starting quarterbacks, backup quarterbacks, it's amazing that some guys keep getting chances. The Sam Darnolds, the Blaine Gabbert types. And I think Jacksonville really made that shrewd move. I think you got to commend Trent Baalke for bringing a guy like Mac Jones in. I think it's low risk, high upside move. And I love that move.
You know, it's probably just a coincidence. Again, we're here with Justin Barney of Channel 4. Because you look over the years, different GMs, different coaching staffs, but whether it's, you know, D-Webb, Shaq Quarterman, Mac Jones, Rasheen Mathis, Darius Williams, there's a lot of guys, Justin, that have found their way playing for the Jaguars that played under the Friday Night Lights here in Northeast Florida.
Yeah, and even last year with DaQuan Jackson, former Lee Riverside star over there. He was on the practice squad last season, and really cool to see some of the guys. I mean, even, you know, K1 Jake's getting a cup of coffee during training camp 1 year, former St. Augustine quarterback / receiver. A lot of guys have come in here, and I think that's cool. And I don't think a lot of times teams, you know, just will bring them in a sense because they have the local cachet, but I think that's more old school now. I think the guys Jacksonville's brought in can play from the area, you know, the Dariuses, those kind of guys, DaQuan Jacksons could play, and really cool to see that. I mean, guys you covered in high school, guys who are natural and local to the area, I think fans can really relate to those guys, and it's cool to see a guy like a Mac Jones or DaQuan Jackson back in their hometown.
We'll talk about the additions in a moment. Let's first talk about Ridley going to Nashville. They're fired up in Tennessee, as you can imagine. It was a money grab, and Calvin, to his credit, basically said as much last week when he was introduced. He said the money was really good, and as to why he, one of the reasons he signed with the Titans. But what did you make of that whole situation last week?
Yeah, I mean, you wanted Calvin back naturally. You gave up a third round pick, a fifth round pick for him, would amount to 17 games. Unfortunately, that's a lot to give up for just one season rental of a guy. So disappointing they weren't able to bring him back. I think a lot of people wanted Calvin back because you knew what you were getting with him, and I think he would be better in his second year. I mean, he said as much in the final availability in the locker room after the season. And did, hey, I'll be better. I'll have that comfort with Trevor, like an Ingram, like a Christian Kirk have being back here another year. So you can't blame Calvin. I mean, he's 30 years old when the season begins, and this is a contract that's going to set him and his family up for life. So you can't blame a guy for taking $50 million guaranteed. And even if it rubbed fans here the wrong way, Calvin did what was right for him, and you can't fault him for that. But I think if you're Jacksonville, just the move in general, by not being able to bring him back, by letting him get to free agency and to be able to talk to teams like the Titans or the Patriots, and having those numbers thrown at him, kind of like Juwan Taylor a year ago. I mean, Jacksonville just can't let the guy they want to keep talk to those other teams, because a lot of money to throw at guys with that salary cap increase. And Juwan last year, Calvin this year, perfect examples of that. So I think Jacksonville needs to shore up that receiver position. I don't like going into the season with just Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk, and Zay Jones as your top three guys. You got to add an alpha to that position, I think, through the draft or even through a sign-and-trade kind of deal.
You know, it's interesting. The Calvin Ridley news was kind of a gut punch to the Jaguar fan base, as you said. But then 24 hours later, they bring in Eric Armstead from San Francisco. And, Justin, I'm not going to go as far as to say he's going to be Calais Campbell. That would be crazy. Calais Campbell is arguably one of, if not the best free agents the Jaguars have ever brought in their team history. But there are similarities, man. There's no doubt there's similarities. Team captain, NFC West, 9 years somewhere else, 30-plus, coming in to help a young group of guys. You know, Walter Payton, man of the year, nominee. A lot of similarities, it seems, between Armstead and when they brought Campbell in 2017.
Yeah, and that's, you know, to even kind of piggyback off of that, you know, Mitch Morse, too, team captain at Buffalo, they signed him. You mentioned all the credentials off the field for Eric Armstead in San Francisco. Maybe Trent Baalke's best draft pick in San Francisco when he was the GM with the Niners, and you're bringing him here, and it fills such a position of need, and there's just a dearth of talent on that offensive line. Jacksonville needed somebody like an Eric Armstead. They've got him, and I think the stuff you mentioned, the peripheral Controls, the Walter Man of the Year four times in a row in San Francisco. That says something. That's what Calais did, and it really helped give Jacksonville's defense that stability, that that nasty edge, and maybe Saxonville 2.0 with Josh Allen coming back, Trayvon Walker, and Eric Armstead kind of filling that that Calais Campbell position of leadership and stuff. So I do like the leadership additions, off the field additions, just as much as the on field stuff you get in Armstead and Morris.
Couple of more for Justin Barney of Channel 4. You mentioned Gabe Davis. I agree. I'd like to see Jacksonville add to that with Zay Jones, Christian Kirk, and now Gabe Davis. But to Gabe individually, the guy isn't even 25 yet. He turns 25, I believe, next week or at the beginning of April. And he's got 27 career touchdown catches. There's no question, Justin, the guy's a playmaker. Now he's out from behind the shadow of Stephon Diggs. He'll be a really interesting one to watch here in Jacksonville.
Yeah, and it really kind of fills that need for that burner. I mean, we Jamal St. Cyr and I talk all the time about just Jacksonville not having that alpha receiver. You got to have a field stretcher, a guy that strikes fear into the hearts of defensive backs and safeties. And Jacksonville just has not had that, had that in a sense a little bit with Calvin Ridley. You had to account for him and his routes on the field, but not just the burner, not a guy that can get out there and just say, go long and throw it up. And, Trevor's going to find somebody down the field like that. And I think Gabe is that potential. So a little worrisome that he's only maxed out at 48 catches in a season. That's his max. But again, a lot of touchdown catches. He's still young enough. You know, he's going to continue to, and you hope he continues to ascend. But I just don't, I like him as maybe a 1B option to somebody. I think Christian is perfect in the slot. But to me, this reminds me too much of the Marvin Jones, Christian Kirk, Zay Jones kind of year where you didn't really have that definitive number one. And I think you really got to address that in the draft, or again, a free agent move with a draft and deal like a Brandon Ayuk or a T. Higgins kind of situation.
Justin, as far as the other guys, Devin Duvernay in, Jamal Agnew out, Darius Williams out, Ronald Darby in, right? Rayshon Jenkins out, Darnell Savage in. They swap kickers with the Commanders. Joey Sly is now here. Brandon McManus is now up there. Are all those pushes, in your opinion, or do you think Jacksonville clearly upgraded in one or two of those spots?
I think a push to slight increase. I think Rayshon getting a little bit older, had a better year the year before than he did last season. Darius was good. I wish we could have brought him back somehow in his hometown. I think that would have been cool. Just his salary was a little bit cost prohibitive. So I think upgrades in some sense, and at worst, I mean, if you can get those guys to come in and be a Darius, or maybe a little upgrade over Darius, a little bit upgrade over Rayshon, I think that's good. I think Devin Duvernay has a little bit more upside than Jamal Agnew did as a receiver. So it's going to be tough to replace what Jamal brought on special teams, but you hope Devin can get in there and help offset that loss a little bit.
Final moments with Justin Barney of Channel 4. Justin, as we begin to wrap up, the Jaguars walked off the field 72 days ago, and it was deflating, right? They were deflated. The fan base was deflated, probably the biggest collapse in franchise history. Now here we are 2.5 months later. Do you think they're better than they were 72 days ago when they left Nashville?
I think they're better in a couple key categories, and I think they're worse in others. I think they're worse at receiver by a step down. I think they're better at offensive line just by the addition of Mitch Morse. And then you add the fact that Ezra Cleveland is probably going to be a little bit more healthier this year than he was last season. I think they're better at that spot. I do think they're better at the interior defensive line with the addition of Eric Armstead. So as a whole, I think addition by subtraction in some spots, but I do like where they're at in those two core position groups, which needed such an infusion of talent than they had last year, offensive line especially.
Justin, as we say goodbye, the Bob Hayes Invitational this past weekend, boy, that was a well-attended event. I saw video of that thing. There were a ton of people there. That was certainly a big story. And then I'm seeing a lot of talk about possible pay increases for high school coaches in the state of Florida. I hope that happens, because you and I have talked over the years, man, that is long, long overdue.
Long overdue, and I don't know how that's going to happen quite yet. I've tracked salaries for about the last 10 years, 11 years, and 40 school districts in our state have given pay raises since then. So 40 of 67, that's nice. But again, you've got men and women making still way, way too little. And you know, the Florida Coaches Coalition has been the kind of the drumbeat of we need to pay these coaches more, which I totally agree with. The problem, just knowing this situation with some pretty good insight, is just where is that money coming from? And I don't think you are going to see a pay increase to minimum wage for coaches, because you know then you're adding hours and stuff to that, and just I don't know where that money's coming from when you're talking about potentially boosting, you know, say in Duval County, a $4,700 football coaching supplement stipend. You're talking about taking that from $4,700 to maybe $18,000 a year, and there's just not that money. And as much as I want to see coaches get a raise, they are overdue. It's unbelievably just insulting what some of these men and women make as coaches. Volunteering their time, and you lose that supplement. I talked to James Collins the other day, the outgoing Jackson basketball coach. He says the supplement you make is gone, you know, just from what you spend on kids and what you need for your program to survive. So, and that's a basketball coach saying that. And football coaches, we know, work a lot more time just because they have two parts of the season control. So unless it's coming from a state fund of some kind, that's the government and legislature in Florida says, hey, we're going to pay coaches from a pot of state gold, then I don't think it's going to happen, because you've got just 67 different school districts and counties in the state. All of those are governed by different teachers unions and stuff. So I don't know, in school districts that are hemorrhaging money and needing more money for infrastructure upgrades and stuff like that, and teacher salaries, I just don't know where that money's coming from. I think the intentions are good. It's great to get that topic out there. I just don't see where that money is going to come from in some of these districts to give coaches much deserved pay raises.
Well, they need to find it, and they need to find it soon, because I agree it is ridiculous some of the salaries these coaches make with the amount of work that they put in. Justin Barney of Channel 4. Justin, appreciate it as always. Hard to believe we're about a month away from high school spring football. It is right around the corner. We'll chat again in a couple of weeks, my friend.
Take care, Hack. Thanks for having me.
Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a crazy busy Tuesday night, our late night show here on 1010XL. We certainly appreciate you staying up late with us. We have a ton of people to thank. Again, thank you to Adam Lichtenstein of the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Thank you to Will Helms of College Football Network for joining us tonight to talk a little college ball and also some NFL draft. We appreciate Will stopping by. My man Scott Jackson up in Virginia Beach talking about the brand new kicker for the Jaguars, Joey Sly. Scott, formerly of AM600 here in Jacksonville, now does work not only in Virginia Beach but on the Commander Radio Network. Thank you to Justin Barney of Channel 4. And thank you to my buddy Brent Beard. You see him locally on First Coast News, and you get him weekly right here on Hacker After Dark. We'll be back tomorrow night on a Wednesday, and we will do it all over again beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for staying up late with us on a Tuesday here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Tuesday night, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Wednesday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.